Mr. Etkin, reel two. Mr. Etkin, at the end of the last reel, we were talking about what knowledge you had of what was going on in Germany and with Hitler and how it was affecting Jewish people there. Could you continue with
that? Yes. I was also talking about Polish antisemitism. Poland was not a real democracy in the way that England is now, that Great Britain is. It was a sort of police state. There was Marshal Piłsudski was in charge, and there was a President Mościcki. Piłsudski died in 1935, and then another marshal was elected or appointed, I don't know exactly what happened, Śmigły Rydz, Marszał Śmigły Rydz. And there was a lot of antisemitism, and it got even worse, maybe because of Germany, maybe because of what was going on in Germany. I remember maybe in 1936 or 7, Goering came to Poland and with a shooting party they went hunting with the Polish marshals and the military.
Did you see him, or was that reported in the
newspaper? No, it was reported in the papers, and there were photographs in the paper. I didn't see him. Lodz was not the capital. And antisemitism became sort of worse in a way. There were one or two pogroms where Jews were beaten up and got some publicity, but not in Lodz, in some other parts of Poland. And there was a lot of friction between the Jewish community and the Polish Catholic community. On the other hand, every Pole would have Jewish friends, and he would say, well, they are all right, and he would do business with them, he would employ them or work for them. And he would rather do business with them, with some Jewish businessmen, than with Poles. But on the other hand, his attitude to the Jews at large was very anti-Semitic. And that was the situation in at least in the town where I live, where the population was between 20% and 30% of the Jews. We used to go for 3 months holidays in the summer, and when I was younger, we would go further away from Lodz to more isolated villages. But later, because of antisemitism, we used to go to Wiśniowa Góra, which was a large holiday place, but there were many Jewish people, and we felt a little more secure. At that time I was transferred from the private schools, where there were only two Jewish boys, to a public school, and where all the boys were Jewish, but all the teachers, apart with the exception of one, were non-Jewish. And the headmaster, on Sunday mornings, he would give us a kind of talk. He would talk about politics. And he was saying that there will be a war. This, I'm talking now about 1938 and 39. The winter of 39. He was saying there will be a war and you will see how the Polish soldier can fight. And I was quite interested in these talks, although I didn't take them as, too seriously. And he also mentioned that when Piłsudski was dying, because he died of cancer, the priest approached him, this was in 1935, telling him that there is bound to be a war, we are going to be attacked, Poland is going to be attacked by Hitler, and the only way to save Poland would be to make a pact with Russia, otherwise we don't stand a chance. And Piłsudski would not agree to it. The priest wanted him to do it, to come to that agreement before he died. And Piłsudski, who used to fight the Russians and he hated the Russians, wouldn't agree to that. That was never reported in any papers. This was simply our headmaster talking about it. He was also saying that there were all kinds of incidents at the borders, that the Germans were trying to provoke the Poles into fighting. And again, these things were played down by the press. But there was the fear of an impending war. We heard about Vienna, the Anschluss. We heard about the Jews being made to scrap the lavatories and that the soldiers marched over some Jews and trampled them to death. And we also knew, because to Poland came a number of Jews of Polish extraction, that was a year, 2 years before the war, and some of them came to lodge, and they couldn't speak Polish, they could only speak German. But my mother was very active, she was helping them. I remember she was helping them in many ways. You didn't have the sort of help that you have nowadays, you know, that unemployed people get help. If you didn't have a job and you couldn't speak the language, you were just left to starve. And I remember she employed one of the women in our flat to do some sewing and repairs, which were not really necessary, but she didn't want to give her simply charity. She wanted to, you know, didn't want to destroy her dignity, so she gave her a kind of a job. And my mother didn't talk to me myself, I was at the time 12 and a half, 13, about it, but I had a good idea of what was going on, and my mother was very, very worried about the situation.
This woman who she employed, the
yes,
Polish
she was a married woman
Jew
with children,
Germany.
Yes, from Germany.
Did she live with you?
No, she didn't live with us. I don't know, she must have found some accommodation, but she would come at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning and stay until 4 o'clock. And my mother would pay her money and gave her a lot of food for it. In addition to it, my mother would have a number of people. She wouldn't give. It was different with charities. You didn't have sort of like Oxfam and so on, where you simply gave money. My mother would help financially and with food, with provisions, a number of people, poor people, who would come once a week or once a fortnight. And it was something that my father resented somewhat. But he was away, and my mother always, she was doing that as far as long as I can remember. But more and more, as it came nearer to the outbreak of the war.
Although the Polish people were very patriotic and felt under threat from Germany, felt Germany would attack them, this didn't in any way lead them to sympathise with what was happening to the Jews. It
in fact made
them more anti-Semitic.
Yes, that was very strange, because they should have realised that the Hitler was the... we were the greatest enemies of... and in spite of it, they considered the Jews cannot fight and they are just... they were not allowed... they were... only one of my cousins was an officer in the army, but this was one in a million. It happened very, very seldom, unless you were 6 foot tall and, 2 meters tall and didn't look very Jewish. Then maybe they would promote you. But normally, Jews in the army didn't stand a chance, because the anti-Semitism was very, very strong.
Within the Jewish community, were there any Jewish organizations, such as the Kehillah or anything
there
like that?
There were Jewish Zionist organizations. I used to go for a while, simply because there were other young boys and girls going there and marching and singing songs. In every house, in every Jewish house, there was a collection box, and somebody would come once a month or so to collect it, and people would put in some money into it, collecting for Israel. My mother's older sister emigrated to Israel when I was to Palestine, when I was born. And so we had relatives in Palestine, and we had many relatives in the United States. And I remember one family that was going to Palestine maybe 2 years before the outbreak of the war. They were not very well off, and the feeling I had, my parents felt a little bit sorry for them. The very poor didn't have a chance, because you needed a lot of money in order to emigrate. You needed £1,000 or something like that. And the ones who were well off wouldn't go there, because knowing that the life there was much harder, and it was somehow going to a third world country, although you didn't know that expression in those days. And the family that were going out, I didn't know them very well. Maybe my parents knew them a bit better, but I felt they couldn't make ends meet. But they were not the poorest of the poorest. They somehow managed to save up enough money. But there was a feeling of kind of feeling sorry for them, that they have to leave a civilized place for a sort of, for a place where life must be much, much harder.
Did you call it Palestine?
Palestine, yes.
Did you or any of your close family, mother, father, brothers, sisters, have any desire to go to Palestine?
No, my father's younger brother emigrated to Palestine. He went there in 1913. That's another story. I can tell you very briefly what happened. My father was already in the Tsar's army. This was 1913. And his younger brother got the call-up papers. They lived in Mogilev, which is now Russia. It's the Ukraine. And when he got the call-up papers, he simply ran away, because there was a danger of being 25 years in the Russian army. This was before the First World War. And he simply took a train to Krakow or somewhere there, part of Poland. And before the family knew, they got a letter from him from Tel Aviv. He died 2-3 years ago. He was one of the oldest inhabitants of Tel Aviv. And then he brought my father's mother to Tel Aviv, to Palestine, and also his another younger brother. But my father by then was in the army, then he was captured by the Germans, then he came to Lodz, and then he settled in Lodz, and he was doing quite well. Although his younger brother, who was in Palestine, did very well. He was one of the founders of the Anglo-Palestine Discount Bank, and he retired some years ago. So he was quite well off in Tel Aviv, but it was still my father who was giving him money for his mother. My father was sort of much better off. And he came to visit us in about 1936. I remember we were on holidays and he stayed with us for a few days. And there was a lot of excitement. We had also, my cousin from America also came to visit us in Poland. But again, we felt we were financially better off than our relatives abroad. So the idea of emigrating because of the danger didn't come into our heads until the last maybe week before the war, before the outbreak of the war.
Did your family try then to get visas?
No, we didn't. What happened, one of the firms where my father was, he was an accountant to a firm of Gershovsky's. And Gershovsky was a large textile manufacturer. And he had another factory in eastern Poland. And I remember my father saying, well, if a war breaks out, we could move to Pinsk, or sort of in the, which is now the Ukraine and part of Russia, as the front comes closer, thinking that the Second World War would be similar to the First World War. Well, we didn't know it was going to be a world war, but if there is a military conflict, we would try to move further east. That was sort of discussed, but I don't think it was a very serious discussion.
So there was no consideration for
but
going
of
abroad?
Going abroad, no, not really.
Can you remember now the events at the outbreak of war, what you were doing, whether you had any warning that this was going to be the day, and exactly what happened?
Well, I remember the Sunday papers, which had a cartoon showing Hitler and Stalin embracing. This was the Stalin, the pact between Germany and Russia, and both of them had knives at the back and embracing and smiling and holding the knives at each other's backs. And that was, we were on holidays then in Wiśniowa Góra, where there were many Jewish families on holidays. And the rumors of an outbreak of war were very sort of coming, very prevalent. And we decided, I was supposed to start going to school on the 1st of September. And normally we would have gone back to Lodz 2 days earlier. But we decided to stay a bit longer in case the war breaks out. So we decided to stay another week or thereabout, even if it meant missing the school. And the war, the outbreak of the war took place on Friday morning. And the moment we woke up, the news was on the radio, the newspapers, Germany has attacked. It was a beautiful summer day. I went into the forest because our bungalow, which we had for the summer, was sort of on the edge of a forest. And I remember sort of thinking about the war and what will happen. My older brother was not with us. He was 4 years older and he went to Zakopane, which was in the Tatra Mountains. He didn't want to come together with us. My father wasn't with us then because he only was coming for the weekends. My mother was with me, my younger sister, my younger brother, and our maid. And on the first day already, I could see planes coming and distant explosions, and the earth was sort of trembling slightly. You could hear those explosions. And we decided to stay in on holidays for the time being. The second day my father came from Lodz, And then on the third day or the fourth day, already you could see refugees coming from the west, peasants with horse-driven carts, with their stock, cows, horses, pigs, you know, chickens and so on.
Did you communicate with any
of
the refugees?
We asked what is happening, and they wouldn't say very much. They were tired. All they asked for some water, but they didn't say much. They were just shaking their heads and just walking in the direction of Warsaw.
These Jewish or Polish?
Polish. Polish peasants mainly. And they were going slowly. Then at night you could see the sky was lit up in the west, and you could hear the rumbling of the front. And then lots of soldiers, Polish soldiers in disarray, began to pass through the holiday village where we were. A tank passed, an old tank.
All in retreat?
In retreat.
Did you talk
and
to these?
We did talk a little bit, and they were all going towards Warsaw, to defend Warsaw. And then a rumor spread that the Germans are not far away, and they are going to murder all the men. And my father and all the men from the area, those that didn't go back to lodge, ran away. So the women were left with the children. I didn't want to run away because I was 14, but I looked like 12. So, and
where did they run away to?
They were running in the direction of Warsaw. And the few extra planes appeared, flying low during the day, dropping a bomb here and there, just to create panic, and more refugees passed. And then it was on the fifth or sixth day, it was quiet. And then the people who were left decided to go back to the women with children, which was mainly now, decided to go back to lodge, to walk, because we were some 10 to 15 miles from lodge, and the trains didn't run anymore. And
did they have a meeting all together, all those that were left? How did they decide?
I think so. Somehow a group was formed, and everyone knew that everyone is leaving now and going, walking to. So we decided, we started to walk about 7 o'clock in the evening, just as the sun was begun to set. And we walked the 2 miles towards the railway station, and there were no trains. The railway station was completely abandoned. And as we were walking, a group of about, I would say, 300 women and children. Yes, before that, I had a bicycle, and suddenly a Polish officer confiscated my bicycle, jumped on it, and went in the direction of Warsaw.
Were you upset?
In the opposite direction to where we were. We were going back to lodge, which meant going west, whereas he was going in the opposite direction.
Were you upset at losing your
Pardon?
Bicycle? Were you upset?
Was upset, but I was more upset about leaving our dog behind, because I had a small dog, and the dog was left in the where we were on holidays.
Why?
I found it was a young puppy. And I don't know, none of the people took dogs or pets. I don't know why, but somehow, oh no, we cannot take the dog with us. And I don't know if anyone was in charge and said you mustn't take a dog or what happened. And suddenly, as we were passing near the railway station, and the sun was setting, suddenly an aeroplane flew very low down, and with its undercarriage tore the telegraph wires, which were running above the railway lines. That made a terrible noise, sort of sound, and the people jumped into a ditch on the side, thinking that now the plane would sort of, they thought that the plane dropped some bombs, but they didn't see us. The pilot didn't see us, but he was flying, it was a German plane, flying so low that he tore the telegraph poles. Whether he did it on purpose or whether he was just flying too low, I don't know, I cannot tell.
That created panic.
It created a tremendous panic. By then we knew that the German planes were flying low and shooting the civilian refugees. So that sort of frightened everyone.
How did you know that?
Rumors. Just rumors, or the radio was saying that, but everyone sort of knew by then.
The radio was still controlled by Polish radio stations.
Yes. Now, as it became dark and we were walking towards Lodz, there was no electricity, no lights whatsoever. The place was in darkness, and it seemed that everybody was gone. Because a few houses, as we were approaching Lodz, after walking for 4 or 5 hours, on the outskirts, it looked as if we were entering a city that has been completely abandoned by everybody. But suddenly, as we came to Widzew, which is the outskirts, a group of prisoners in prison uniforms, who were being released from the prisons, they were being freed, and they were going towards Warsaw in the opposite direction, and they were sort of shouting to us, "Don't go there, the Germans will kill you, go back," and making jokes and saying, "Everyone has left Lodz, what are you doing, you're going in the wrong direction." And they were marching or walking in the opposite direction. We arrived in our flat at dawn.
Did this not make people turn back and go to Warsaw? Did everybody
continue?
No,
we were too tired, and no, we couldn't do it. Warsaw was over 100 kilometers, and this was another 5 kilometers was our flat.